This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Good evening, White Sox fans, and welcome to the latest edition of Future Sots Hot Takes and Heaters. My name is Danny Miller, the gentleman you see and hear, as usual, my regular co-host, Jacob Thome. How you doing today, Jacob?
Cheating on me? Is there an irregular co-host?
Well, you know. We have some plans to bring some other folks on here in the coming weeks, and I figured, you know, maybe we'll tease that a little bit. But for now, you're the man. We're definitely going to keep you as the man, but we would like to introduce some of our other guys. So, how's things, man?
Good, good. Hanging in there. No complaints. It's warmer, and yeah, that's all I have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. My dogs are liking that too. The new puppy did not want to go outside at all last week, and now she's like ready and raring. So, yeah, man. Dude, it's the 22nd of December.
Yes, it is.
2 weeks ago, I said we might have the highlight of the season when we were dealing with winter meetings and, you know, some of the draft stuff and Rule 5 stuff and. You know, we thought maybe that was going to be the highlight of our winter, right? But here we are, dude. It's the Mooney. It's the Mooney Murakami show, dude.
Yeah. Like,
what?
Insane. Yeah. I mean, just crazy how it went down as well. I mean, just not a nothing. And then Saturday night, there's a report. And then. Boom, Sunday morning, he's a White Sox.
Yeah, it was one of those things where, like, well, the Sox are in. You know, I think it was a couple weeks ago, there was kind of like some roundabout little rumors, like, there's some interest, but man, none of it seemed like anything was all that real. And then it just went away, and they were like, there was even reports like they were out, you know, like that ship has sailed. And then, like, sometime last week, it started coming back around again, where it was like, oh, there's three teams, and the White Sox are emerging as the top.
Yeah.
And you and I talked about it a little bit last week, and we were like, you know what? It might be a good fit, depending on the cost. But, like, you know, we're over here spending the GM and the owner's money like it's ours, right? And it's not. And we could make all the comments we want over here, but, you know, you could throw it on your wish list and, you know, hope that it happens and – maybe you expect it, maybe you don't, even if it makes sense to you, but here we are.
Yeah, it's a crazy good thing. We'll break it down a little bit more, but yeah, just it was an insane feeling of euphoria when that thing broke. And I know it's rare that you see on social media that, like, everybody enjoys a deal, and this is one where everybody on social media is incredibly happy that this happened.
Yeah, listen, here's the thing. Like you said, we're gonna get into some numbers. We'll break some things down a little bit today. But, you know, the reality is whether or not you're into the whole strikeout thing, and again, we'll elaborate much more on that a little bit later. You know, whether or not you feel like he's gonna be successful, here in the U.S. This is a good deal for the White Sox, and there are many reasons why. There's a lot of reasons why, and you know the price tag was much lower than anyone had projected. I did not see any projections that put him under $50 million, and for only 2 years. So let's just get the obvious out of the way and talk about that a little bit, because the reality is what this signals to me, and I'm looking forward to hearing more of this come out, and I think James and Ian kind of discussed this a little bit last night on their show, but what it signals to me is this is a guy who's betting on himself, right? He's, you know, 25, going to be going in his 26 season coming up here. By the time his contract expires in 2 years, he's going to be 27 years old, which is right at about peak for, you know, most players, average, right around the age 27 season. And he's going to be up for another contract. So this is a guy who, you know, has some ties to the White Sox organization already, whether they're, you know, all that thick in ties. But he's a guy who's he's betting on himself. He's looking at an organization that he thinks he can help. And I would assume that he probably took a look at the ballpark factor as well, being a left-handed hitter and looking at the way the ball flies out of the field, the right field here in Chicago. And, you know, if he can put 65 to 75 dingers up over the next two seasons, he's going to get paid in 2 years, regardless of if it's here or somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the advantage for the Sox and potentially a trade chip. I know nobody wants to hear that about a guy who was just signed, but there is that potential if you don't think you're going to be.
Oh, Jake's potatoing on me here.
Oh, am I back?
Yeah, you're back. You're back. You potatoed for a second there. So if you want to just go ahead and finish that thought, you were saying that the potential for trade.
Yeah, for you know, there's definitely a potential to make a move. You know, whether that's, you know, because of you're just not able to pay him or whatever that reason is, you could move him in a couple of seasons and or next season at the deadline and get a haul for him, hopefully, if you're able to develop him.
Yeah. And, you know, Wolf brings up here in the chat that Schwarber got MVP votes last year or a couple of years ago, and after only hitting 197 with 215 strikeouts. High whiff rates are a trade-off for most power hitters in this era. And Chris Getz actually hit on that a bunch today in the press conference. And we'll get more into that press conference and the welcome to Chicago for Mooney a little bit later. But it's 100% true. You know, guys that hit bombs get paid these days, and that's just how it goes. And this White Sox lineup has been sorely lacking the power numbers. And especially in a field that screams for guys hitting tanks. So, you know, I'll elaborate a little bit on the trade thing. Because, you know, like you said, nobody wants to hear that right now. And I just don't think that that's a move that the White Sox are even looking at the moment. If you develop him and he starts out well in the first half of this season, I think you hang on to him. Because you got him for a bargain as it is. Like, there ain't too many first basemen that are going to go out and have the potential to hit you 35 home runs or more every season. And that are only making like, you know, $16 million a year, $17 million a year. So like the chances of them trading him right off the bat, unless again, you know, we can try to sit in Chris Getz's chair all we want and try to get inside his mind and, you know, listen to all the things that he might be hearing from the guys that he surrounded himself with. But the reality is I think you try to get the most out of him without trading him away, because this opens a lot of doors to the Asian market, which, you know, the White Sox used to play in and haven't in a long time. And I think the last thing you want to do is trade this guy away early in his stint here on the South Side and signal that that's the kind of thing that's going to happen. Because I don't think that these guys coming over from Japan are looking for instability right off the bat, right? They're looking for somewhere they can flourish. And, you know, again, if it's only a two-year deal like Mooney's is, you're looking for an opportunity to make yourself more money in the long run.
Yeah, that was kind of what James is talking about there. I think if he's going to be a guy who's going to get, you know, $300 million, $400 million contract of free agency, The earliest I think the Sox would trade him would be next year's trade deadline. So in terms of not in his second deal of that contract, at that deadline, if you're looking at a point where he's going to get a $300 million contract and you'd like to move off of him, I think that's where they'd trade him. Again, I agree with you. They're not going to move him before that. Just kind of if he truly is going to get a massive contract, I think they could potentially move off of him.
Yeah, so you know, we have a comment here in the chat. James Quinlan, thanks for checking in. Thanks for your input. He says if he hits his ceiling, we almost have to trade him. Sox don't shell out that kind of money. I don't want to cross that bridge just yet. The fact that the White Sox are paying the Yakult Swallows $7 million just for his posting fee on top of this contract right now kind of signals a change in what's happening in that front office. You know, the reports are all over the place whether or not Ishbia's had any influence on that, or whether or not that Ishbia's had any influence on staff hires. You know, some guys say, you know, that he's injecting his money into things and he's not injecting it. He's kind of just taking a back seat and waiting for his turn. We don't really know, but the reality is this is different for what the White Sox are typically known for doing. You have to go back to Luis Robert. Yes, Luis Robert Jr., they paid double what his contract was because they had to pay the taxes and posting fees for that as well. And it basically, you know, the $26 million turned into $52 million on the White Sox end for that. But it's a little different when we talk about dipping our toes back into the Asian market that they haven't been part of in a long time. So I don't think that it's outside the realm of possibility that maybe in 2 years we could be looking at a team that is essentially built from the ground up on the inside and guys are on rookie contracts still and there's not a ton of money on the books that you couldn't shell out a big contract to Murakami if he does hit his ceiling or even develops more, which, again, was talked about in the press conference today. If he turns out to be a guy that they feel like can be part of the future after that 2 years, he might be the guy to finally break some barriers with this with the contract signings and get the first large contract in White Sox history and break that glass ceiling. So Uncle Ten says, win now. Yeah, I mean, this definitely does suggest that there's just a change in the philosophy and a possible speed up in this rebuild. What do you think, Jake?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you're in a weird spot right now where your farm system's not amazing. It's good. I mean, it's not bad. It's just not great. I think when you look at kind of the overall process, I think you're looking at kind of 2027. I think you look at that's probably when Rock's going to come up. Carlson, potentially, Fauci, potentially. Obviously, those are two prep guys. You never know how long those guys are going to take. And then, you know, you'd also have two more years of development with Colson, those kind of guys. So, I think there's a potential to kind of compete next year for a playoff spot. I think the goal this year is to not lose 100 games and potentially push 70 wins. Like, I think that's kind of the realistic goal. I know that's not what the locker room thinks, but I think for the White Sox, I think 70 wins is kind of the goal there. Potentially they're buyers at the deadline if things go like extremely well, but I just don't see them pushing all their chips in right now. Just kind of depending on what the prospects look like, I guess. But yeah.
Yeah, obviously, you know, this is the way too early prediction show, I guess, when we're talking about those kinds of things and where the White Sox are going to be at the end of Murakami's contract or even at that, you know, let's just say a few months before that contract ends when we get into that deadline of the second year of that deal. But I do feel like it signals that the White Sox are willing to make some moves when a lot of folks thought we weren't going to make any type of move whatsoever. Whether or not that move plays out is still it's a big question. You know, obviously there are some holes in his game. There's some risk, there are some worries, and they're legit concerns, right? And we talk about a guy whose whiff rate is, you know, 28-29%. That's a pretty big concern. But, you know, as James pointed out on their show last night on the Future Sox podcast, you know, he's not a guy like Lenin Sosa who just swings away and tries to hit tanks and doesn't walk at all. He does have a little bit higher of an on-base percentage. He will walk a few times. His thing is more of, I think he just needs to be slightly more selective of the pitches that he swings at. His in-zone whiff rate is not great. Again, that's something I feel like can be fixed with the right kind of tools and the right kind of coaching, which feels like the White Sox have been trying to, you know, kind of do to bolster their system all the way through, up and down, starting at low A and, you know, all the way up to the Major League Ball Club. And I think they have shown signs of being able to help guys with their approach and have better contact rate. But, dude, this guy is a guy who's he would have been the hardest hit. He would have had the hardest hit rate in all the Major League Baseball last year. So, yeah, he's missing some balls, right? But when he does hit them, he absolutely tears the cover off of them. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, and going back to James and Ian, I know we brought him up like four times now, but we're talking about this. I mean, his team sucked. The Swallows were horrible. Like, was there a lot of times where he was just like swinging for the fences because he was carrying the franchise? And I'm not saying he's not going to have to do that here, but like, is he literally trying to put as much into it as possible if it's in the zone? And, you know, I think there's more of a potential for him to not be a three outcome hitter like he probably kind of was in Japan. I mean, if everything works out, like the 100th percentile for him is Nick Kurtz. Like that's the type of player he potentially could be. That's the power he has. That's kind of the, if everything goes right, that's what he could be.
Yeah. I'll take that offensive.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Just
thousand. I mean, obviously, defensively, we're that's not a comp that we're going to throw out there because this guy's never going to be behind the dish. But yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where kind of the 100%, if everything goes right, that's what it looks like offensively. So, you know, I think what you did if you're the White Sox is you just bought a top prospect for $34 million. You just bought a top 10 prospect for $34 million. Dude's 25 years old. And it's a smart decision. If it doesn't work out, who cares? You're not going to be competitive over the next 2 years anyway, and you now have more time next, you know, or more money in 27 to spend. So I think it's a win-win deal for either side if Murakami can show out like I think the city of Chicago needs him to.
Yeah. It's the thing here to remember is he's going to have more protection here than he had with the Swallows. He was the whole team. Like you said, is he shouldering all the responsibility to put runs on the board? And that could be potentially a factor in the way the guy swings at the ball, because he's putting all the pressure on himself to win whatever game they possibly can, because they were not winning a lot of games. They were much like the White Sox, where there was a lack of offensive production pretty much across the board, and he was it. Okay. So, and there's been comps to, you know, guys in the major leagues that have done the same thing and, you know, maybe have turned some things around when they got here. But the key outside of that is he's going to be protected. I've heard, you know, some of the experts say that he projects as a five hole hitter. He's not going to be your 2, 3, or 4 guy. He's going to be a five hole hitter because of the swing and miss in his game. But if you put him in the five hole, I mean, we're looking at a team that's got Colson Montgomery, Lenin Sosa when he's playing. You've got Miguel Vargas, who has the potential to hit some bombs. But then you've got Edgar Carroll, Kyle Teal. If Luis Robert Jr. is still playing center field, you're not going to be able to pitch around a lot of these guys, right? And having that sort of protection might afford him some more balls in the zone that he can connect with and maybe clean up that whiff rate just a little bit, especially the, you know, in zone strikeout rates. So, and Wolf, that's funny. He is right as I'm saying this, he says, "Where do you bat him?" I'm thinking I do probably keep him in the 4 or 5 hole. I don't want to go any deeper in the lineup with him because I do want him to be protected. I want him to have a guy in front of him and a guy behind him that's going to force pitchers to throw him in the zone, because they've got to worry about if they don't throw him in the zone and he does have the ability to walk, like we talked about just a few minutes ago. If you're not throwing him in the zone and he's taking walks, you put him in the, you put him in a position where he's got somebody in front of him and somebody behind him. You don't want to put him on base and have, let's say, you know, Colson Montgomery or Edgar Caro or whoever it is behind him now taking a shot at hitting a tank and bringing them both in. Right? You got any thoughts on that, Jake?
Yeah, I think that's about right. I mean, I think, you know, your 3-4 is going to be some combination of Colson and him. I think it makes probably more sense to put Murakami at the 4. And then, like you said, I mean, you still have, I mean, Robert, I would assume if on the team is going to hit 2, depends on what they do in right. I don't know what their right field plan is. I think if Talkman comes back, who we could talk about that in a little bit, but I think you look at, if you have Talkman, then he's your leadoff and that kind of pushes the order down. But, you know, there's a lot of hitters that they can put behind him. I think there's more offensive depth with this team. I mean, wherever, you know, that's Miguel Vargas or one of the catchers or Colson, as you mentioned, to put behind him.
I mean, even Lanin, if Lanin's behind him, right, with the potential to hit 25, 30 a year, you know,
correct,
he's going to be protected more than he ever was with the occult team. So, I mean, it's again, you know, and I see what Uncle said trying to say in the chat, you know, against righties, you get them in a 3-hole because it's more at bats for them. And maybe that's the case further down the road, but I think you need to prove that he's going to continue his development here in the U.S. before you put that kind of, number one, before you put the kind of pressure on him. And number two, I want to see if the White Sox organization, the coaching staff, can kind of break him of some of his bad habits without sacrificing too much of his power. And then maybe we can talk about maybe moving him up into that 3-hole, which will afford him even more protection at that point and get him more at-bats to put more runs across the plate. But I think if it was me as the manager, I definitely want to see where his development goes before we place him anywhere in the lineup. And, you know, I would like to see a little bit of that whiff rate and that, you know, just clean it up a hair. And here's the thing that a lot of folks are saying as well. You know, his whiff rate was 28% in Japan. I think Ian even said it last night. Like, you expect that to be maybe even a slightly higher coming over to the States where pitching's going to be better, you know, than he's faced over there. I would hope that, you know, the Sox have some ability to unlock something in him that prevents that from happening and maybe even makes it so that they can lower that whiff rate.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of interesting options here. For one, the White Sox now have an analytical crew that can do this. They have a guy like Ryan Fowler. They have Showman, who talked today about his reaction to the signing, which was hilarious. They have, I'm trying to think of the name of the thing that I cannot think of, but they have the machine that emulates pitchers.
Project.
Thank you. like, they can get some of these different looks, and Murakami can start going on this. Now, there is something interesting here where the World Baseball Classic is going to eat into his spring training time. So, that's something interesting, and obviously I think that the White Sox had been comfortable with that when they made the signing, but that's going to eat into his spring training time. Again, nothing wrong with it. I think the World Baseball Classic is awesome. It's just, that's a kind of a thing with this where And he does have options. So if you start him in the year in AAA, I think White Sox fans would absolutely hate that. But I don't think it's necessarily impossible that he gets a couple of weeks, not a crazy amount of time, but a couple of weeks to get ramped up in AAA.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I'm not sure I see that happening, but there's definitely the possibility there if they don't feel comfortable with throwing him out there as part of the everyday lineup right off the bat. You know, obviously, you know, the thought around baseball, MLB, is going to be, well, you know, if he's good enough to play in the World Baseball Classic, if he's good enough to be an everyday starter for the last three or four seasons in Japan, Japan will typically play out almost like AAA, just a hair below what MLB is over here. So, you know, I don't know. But there's definitely going to be some – there's going to be an adjustment period, right? This is not – like, I'm going to put this out here right now. As White Sox fans, I am going to implore you to be patient. This is not an easy move for any of those guys coming across the pond, not really knowing the language all that well. Although Getz did say during his press conference that he has gotten a head start on his English. He kind of knew that he was going to eventually be coming over here. It's been a dream of his since he was a kid, he said. So I think that, you know, that might play less of a role, obviously, but it doesn't help, right? One of the other things he talked about, and have you heard this, Jake? During the press conference today, he talked about reaching out to Seiya Suzuki and Yoshinobu Yamamoto and, you know, some of the other guys that are already playing over here, but particularly the guys right here in Chicago on the north side, about the city of Chicago. Do you feel like having guys like that, that he could reach out to, do you think that helps him? Do you think that makes him a little more comfortable?
Yeah. I mean, I'd assume that Seiya and, Ibanaga are kind of in that pocket where, listen, Chicago's a diverse city. I mean, there's people from everywhere in the city. There's, you know, certainly I think that helps going to a major market, although Jerry does likes to forget that the White Sox are in a major market. It is the third most populated city in the United States. And so I think that helps. I mean, in terms of what you're doing, and obviously the Cubs have had success bringing those two guys specifically over. And, you know, it's not a West Coast team, which I think is kind of where everybody kind of thinks about when you think about some of these Asian-born players. But yeah, another thing I'm kind of interested in is, you know, what does Anthony Kay look like? Was he a part of the, I don't want to say negotiation process, but, you know, were they using him to kind of scout? Because obviously Kay had faced him over in Japan multiple times. I believe Murakami did very well against Anthony Kay. I want to say his OPS was about 1,000. So I wonder if he was a part of that conversation. I don't know if that was answered in the press conference or not. Unfortunately, my show was like in the middle of that press conference. But
no, I didn't actually hear his name come up. It maybe I missed it, but I did not hear Anthony Kay's name come up.
So yeah, I would be interested to see, you know, what was that process. Obviously, I think everybody understands what Murakami is, but I mean, obviously, you get a self scout with a guy that you just signed. So. Yeah.
And Wolf brings up in the chat here that there's a big Japanese community in Arlington Heights, and, you know, not a bad place for a guy with some money, to move to in his first time living in the U.S. as well. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, I want to kind of take a second to point out a couple of things. It's maybe obvious. I don't know if it felt obvious to me, but, you know, we go and we look at this press conference, and I know you didn't get a chance to really, you know, watch the whole thing through. I'm sure you caught some of the highlights and whatnot, but I mean, he opened up with a little bit of English, you know, as we've been talking about, and his first thing was like saying, you know, my heart is with you, Chicago and the White Sox. And he pulled out like an actual, like, souvenir White Sox tube sock, you know, which was cool. the obvious thing to me was he seemed pretty comfortable. He seemed, you know, happy to actually be here. He was, at least for the beginning, anyway. But he just felt genuinely happy and excited to be here and be in Chicago, not just in the States. There was something about being in Chicago. And, you know, again, to point out the obvious, we know that his manager with the Occult Swallows was somebody who was very familiar with the Chicago White Sox organization. You know who that is, Jake?
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
This is Michael Rosenbaum. Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.
Can't remember the name right now, but I do know that he was the closer back in the day.
Shingo Takatsu. Shingo Takatsu, his manager in Japan, played for the White Sox and apparently spoke very highly of the organization to him, which made him feel more comfortable. I know he's got some ties with Gooch as well. So, you know, again, that doesn't hurt. And it's actually kind of cool to hear that, you know, maybe some of the major league players here in the States were like, for, you know, many years there during the last rebuild, like, I don't want to go play there. Hey, the organization's a mess. And then, you know, we get guys that did play here and left here and had all kinds of bad things to say about what was going on here in the organization, which made it even worse. You don't want to go play with the White Sox. That organization is a shit show, you know, yeah, basically.
Right.
And now we're hearing other things like, nah, these guys are like, you know what? Class act. And Chris Getz and company have made some moves to make some changes to kind of bring back some credibility to the organization. And my thing was I was wondering if we were going to get any kind of report about Carlos Rodriguez and his involvement in this, because we hadn't heard anything yesterday. The White Sox hire him on because of his international prowess, right? And I thought maybe he would have had some input on this, but I didn't hear it brought up. I mean, I thought that was kind of odd.
Yeah, it's such an interesting you know, we talked to last time we were on the show, the news broke like halfway through the show. And I still don't know the answer of who's in charge of international scouting. Is it Rodriguez or Keller?
Well, Keller was brought up.
Right. Keller is from the Mets organization. He is like the guy who Chris, was in
Chris
charge
Chris Getz
of,
actually did bring him up. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, did he? You know, go yeah. ahead if you know something. But, yeah, I don't know what who's the boss of who there. Obviously, Rodriguez has got the title of assistant general manager, but I believe Keller is the director of international scouting. So I don't know, yeah, who is in charge of who or if they're working together. I mean, they're working together in some variety, but I don't know what that looks like. But obviously, I kind of expected Keller to be a part of it. Obviously, he's been with the White Sox now for a year. But yeah, I don't know what Chris Rodriguez's total role is. I also don't think he's entirely involved in international scouting. I think he, from what kind of some of the Merkin stuff was written about, he's a guy that wears many hats and kind of took over that role in Tampa Bay in terms of being a guy who was doing everything. And I think that's a big part of why he came over. Really good baseball mind. I'm very shocked that he ended up choosing the White Sox to be an assistant general manager, but it seems like he could have done a lot. I mean, obviously he was touted as potentially the guy for the Yankees director of international scouting. So just kind of show you kind of what level he was at.
Yeah. I mean, that signing that, you know, as far as staff signings go was a pretty big one. Obviously this guy is pretty well respected throughout baseball. You know, coming from Tampa, obviously is already a pretty big deal when it comes to baseball and how their organization is run behind the scenes. And then you also bring up the Yankees. Like, there were a lot of folks that thought he was going to be making some moves, you know, within the Yankees organization. And, you know, it didn't really pan out that way. He comes to Chicago. He takes a, you know, assistant GM position. And I think the thought really is that this guy's probably going to make his way into a GM role maybe at some point, and maybe at a fairly young age. I don't know. But you know, it's kind of one of those situations where I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. And for whatever reason it was that he did come here, I'm just going to be excited about it and accept it. Cause I mean, you know, there's been a couple of those signings within the Sox organization here recently, as far as staff and, you know, coaching and management goes, and you kind of question like why, but do I really want to know the answer? Why? I guess it doesn't matter. You know, I'm going to take it for what it's worth and just say, hey, you know what? We're making some pretty big strides.
Yeah. The other thing to watch there is like Barfield very well could be a general manager in the next cycle. Like Barfield's a guy where he's well respected as well. Obviously came over here from Arizona, has been the assistant general manager to Getz since his first offseason. So like both of those guys, I think, are going to eventually be general managers here in probably the near future. So it's something fun to watch as both those guys, you know, I don't remember the last time we had a guy picked to be a general manager from our organization. I couldn't tell you, but that means you're doing something right. And I obviously Barfield and will now be, Rodriguez will earn a lot of credit for what happens here.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the big, probably the, in my mind, the best way to answer that question is I think these guys maybe see this as an opportunity to say, look at this organization I stepped into that went from 41 wins to 60 wins and like just the dregs of baseball and being absolutely crapped on by all the media outside of Chicago. A lot of it inside Chicago as well. But, you know, and I can't say that we have not participated in that in some way, shape, or form, even though we try to keep it positive around here. Sometimes the realist in me doesn't allow me to do that. But, you know, the fact that if these guys are part of this organization and they really start to turn things around, right? If there's real signs of being a world-class organization again, that's a huge bullet on your resume. And I don't see why that once that happens, we won't be able to continue, because we're going to lose some of these guys if that happens, right? It's a no-brainer. They're young guys on the up and coming, and they're going to get some opportunities outside of Chicago. We're going to have to fill those holes. So as long as things keep moving in the right direction, I think that helps our potential chances in the future to continue that pipeline of staff hires that, that work well for us as well.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
So I guess since we're talking about the staff a little bit, and I know I apologize, I keep going back to this press conference today, but one of the things I really enjoyed, and I know you've been a Chris Getz advocate pretty much since day one. I will begrudgingly admit I was not, you know, and I put it out there. I'm so happy to be wrong, right? Because now I'm 100% a Chris Getz guy. You know, I'm just some dude who.
Dang, it's gone.
I'm just some dude who, well, I'm choking to death over here. So that cold I started to get last week is full on right now.
Great.
Yeah. But Chris Getz has won me over and then some. And he won me over even a little bit more today during that press conference. Because there was a couple of times, and you know what? Chicago media, love them or hate them, they really tick me off sometimes. They absolutely drive me batty. Because Merkin gets up there, he's the first guy to ask a question. Obviously, he's the White Sox beat reporter that, you know, the Sox typically kind of lean on him as their guy, you know, when it comes to reporting here within the city. And I'm glad they went to him first. And he went out and he asked the right questions. And from there, it kind of snowballed afterwards. And I couldn't hear real well who they were talking to and what the questions were, but you could hear the answers coming back. And there was a couple of times where you could hear the reporters asking, like, you know, how do you feel about, are you going to be able to fix your strikeout rates and your whiff rates and all these things? And they were just, I mean, immediately asking the tough questions, the hard stuff during his introduction press conference, right? And I will say this, the Mooney handled the questions very well. But as far as Chris Getz goes, there were a couple of times he didn't even let Mooney answer. He jumped right in and he went and he protected his guy. Because, obviously Chicago sports media could have went harder. It is a tough market when it comes to that. They're gonna ask those tough questions. But, I mean, let's get it together, folks. It's the first day. We're going to be talking about this guy and talking to this guy a lot in the coming weeks, months, years, right? We don't need to start firing on his confidence. Are you confident? You know, can you lower your whiff rate? Is it going to get worse? Like, stop.
Yeah.
Just stop. Go ahead.
Bizarre line of question. I don't know. I mean, not that I've ever been a reporter before, but, you know, you kind of got to ask the questions that the guy's going to answer.
Well, they're obviously legit concerns, right?
Yeah.
But do we need to do a day one?
Yeah. Well, and what is he supposed to say? I never understood this with press conference questions.
That's like, what I was looking for,
Jake. You're like, where is, you know, it's just the questions, like, of course, I think I can improve. Like, duh. Like, what is the point of going you know, how did you feel about this law or whatever the question is, where it's just like, yeah, of course, like, duh, like, I have to say this. I think they're pointless questions. I don't know. Just like, I'm going to improve.
Is he going to come out and say like, oh yeah, the reports a couple weeks ago of a $200 million plus contract were wrong. Goodness.
Yeah.
Gracious.
I'm worthless. I am worthless. I'm not worth that money. I cannot improve. I'm going to strike out at a 50% clip, and I'm going to be a bust.
Right.
End of press conference.
I took $34 million in the States just to, you know, take my $34 million payday, which he probably actually would have gotten a better payday if had he stuck in Japan, or at least a longer term contract. But, you know, yeah, and Uncle Ted says these guys are asking these questions to get a headline. I get that.
That doesn't give you a headline, though.
You're not going to get a headline because he's not going to say anything other than, yeah, I believe in myself. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to do my best to contribute every day. It's the same answer every time from these guys.
It's the stupidest thing in sports. It drives me insane. It's just it's repetitive. It's just when there's nothing to Like, and it's an obvious thing. I'll never get it. I watch every single some of these press conferences I watch. I'm like, what did you want him to say? It's like when they ask guys preseason. Like, if you were to ask the Browns coach preseason, are you going to win the Super Bowl? Obviously, his question's going, or his answer is going to be yes. He knows he's not going to win the Super Bowl. What is he supposed to say?
Yeah, was he supposed to say, we're the Browns and we suck and we know
right. Stuff? Like, there's there's nothing there.
Yeah. No, and but like I said, I was really impressed to just see Chris Getz take the opportunity, not even give him or his translator a chance to jump on that. You know, he just took it and said, listen, this is what it is. This is what we saw in him. This is where our heads are at. We do believe that he can improve. We do believe in his work ethic. He talked about getting him on, the right kind of meal plan to get him the right nourishment to, you know, be in the best shape of his career but also to make him comfortable here in the States. You know, obviously, culturally, especially here in Chicago with the melting pot of, you know, just absolute food heaven we're in, is, you know, somewhere where it could get off the rails pretty quick for a guy coming over. But the White Sox are looking at all the ways they can help him to succeed. And
yeah,
that question is ridiculous. All those questions are ridiculous. If you think they're not going to do that and he's not going to try to do that.
Yeah, it's insane. No, weird that you bring up food and nutrition. So that's like one of the things that like Chris Rodriguez was doing in the Rays like organization. Like, those are bizarre. I'm going like way back 15 minutes here, but yeah, bizarre. Like, that's kind of one of the things he was doing, is like focusing on nutrition. And it's like, all right,
yeah, maybe that was our reference, and I just totally missed that now that you say it. That was our Chris Rodriguez reference, maybe, is the like, oh, you know what? He's only been here a short time, really didn't get a chance to get in on the Murakami showcase, so to speak. The influence and bringing him over, but he might have some ideas about how to get him acclimated and keep him healthy and get him on the right track, or even a better track than he's ever been on. What's up, Trey? Thanks for checking in.
But, also glad to have a 6'2 first baseman.
There you
Enjoying
go.
Enjoying not having our short king, Andrew Vaughn.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, maybe the defense gets a little bit better than it was at third base, where he played most of his time in Japan. There's always a knock. And that question was asked, you know, later in the press conference as well, too. And he was like, he didn't just say, I'm going to work on. He was like, no, not only am I going to work, I am going to improve. Like, he was very adamant about that. And he was very sincere. And, moving him over to first base might help him out. Obviously, you know, and if we've got this solid defense infield, which for the most part has been better the last year, I think, the throws are going to get there. It's going to be, like you said, bigger target than Andrew Vaughn. So there's going to be less overthrows. He's going to have a little bit more stretch to get to some of those balls that are maybe a little bit wide of the bag. Honestly, and James and Ian made me chuckle a little bit last night, but they were like, you know, he can't be any worse than Lenin Sosa was in the second half defensively. Like, you know, everybody's knocking Lenin Sosa was like, he can't play second base because his defense bad. No, he can't play first base.
Yeah.
Because his defense is bad.
Lenin's fine at second. I think you put him at first just in the middle of the season. I don't know how many people would have succeeded in that situation, but certainly it was tough for a guy who already isn't a defensive first second baseman.
That's poor Lenin. He wasn't terrible at second. I keep saying it. I keep bringing it up. Nobody wants to listen. Nobody wants to hear it. All they remember is he had some big snafus. Let's just say it. They were ugly errors. You know, there wasn't a lot. It didn't kill the White Sox. They were errors that, you know, for a guy who's going to hit 22, 25, maybe more home runs, you kind of look past them. All the people here are just going to beat the crap out of them for it. First base, though. He might as well have been on the moon.
Yeah.
He did not look comfortable there at all.
So. No, he missed the bag on that one. I mean, he had a couple of really bad ones at first. You're halfway through the season. I don't necessarily blame him for that.
Yeah. The one thing that if we take away anything from here, whether or not, you know, he's the offensive stud that we're all hoping he's going to be. Mooney is going to be probably the guy that's going to be there, you know, 80-85% of the time throughout the season. And if you've got an everyday guy who's played there a little bit before, he might not be the most natural position for him, but he's played a little bit before at first base. You coach him up, and you hope he can, you know, learn as much as possible before the season starts. The idea that you're going to have a guy in place for most of the season instead of that merry-go-round they had for the second half after they dealt away Andrew Vaughn is already an improvement.
Yeah, 100%. I'm trying to look up quickly. I don't think I'm going to get there, but I would think that, I mean, he kind of makes sense as like a Devers type of defensive profile, where at third it was atrocious, but I don't know what Devers looked like at first. I just found
it.
He was a league average first baseman.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, that's kind of the defensive profile I think gives off is Rafi Devers. And if he's going to be a league average first baseman, I think you're completely fine with that.
You got a league average first baseman that hits 35 dingers a year, right? Or more, potentially more.
Yeah.
Potentially more. I mean, the low end of his numbers in Japan is like in the, you know, mid to upper 30s, right? Anywhere between like 35 and 37 is like, if we get anywhere close to his 56 home run season that he had in 22, which, you know, I don't care if we do or not. We don't have to get to 50 home runs, but give me 35 a year. It would. But you get 35 a year with just barely league average defense. That's better than anything we've had there in a long time. Sorry, yeah. Andrew Vaughn, not to take away from what he did in Milwaukee for, you know, a month or whatever last year, a month and a half before, you know, returning to Earth. Defensively, I think this guy's going to be just as good or better, hopefully better. And,
yeah,
you know, Andrew Vaughn never hit 35, so.
Didn't particularly come close. Do they have, I was thinking about this morning walking into work, do they have two of the top like 10 lefty power bats in the league? I mean, if Murakami kind of pans out and what Colson's being able to do, I mean, they have two of lefty power, which isn't like a super deep place. I mean, they have two of the premier, I would think, lefty power bats in the MLB.
As they should.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like that, I don't think you're that far off by saying it's closer to in the top 10 between Colson and, you know, now Mooney. Like there's, I don't know. Like I said, they should. The way right field plays in the summer out there,
yeah,
they should have guys teeing off on that side of the plate. It's been something that's been missing from this team for a long, long time. So I think they're hitting some spots that were positions of need, whether or not, you know, you think they're going to pan out the way the White Sox things seem to think they're going to pan out. Again, it's all improvements and it's all in the way of, you know, it's not really costing the team much in the way of like, are we on our way to, you know, finishing up this rebuild? Because it has the potential, if it works out, to be way better.
Yeah.
Then just let's find out and see. If he falls on his face, well, then he falls on his face. We tried. It's not a killer. It's not going to be something that, you know, ruins our payroll. And then come 27, 28, when we're looking at hopefully really competing and looking for those finishing pieces, his money's off the books.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what I kind of mentioned earlier is like, you know, it comes off the books in 27 when you're likely trying to spend more money for kind of putting the finishing pieces on a playoff contending team. So I think that's kind of what makes sense for the White Sox. I thought the contract was almost perfect. I mean, about as good as it can get.
Yeah, it was a contract I think was beneficial for both. Gives him an opportunity to, you know, make a few mil now and still have that potential 200 plus million contract later and be in the prime of his career. It also gives the White Sox an opportunity to, you know, dip their toes in this Asian market, do it at a reasonable cost during a time when you really don't have a whole lot of money in the books anyway. and there's still a chance that, you know, some of Luis Robert's money comes off the books before the season starts. We'll see how that works out. But now was just, I think the timing was perfect for both sides to kind of take a little bit of a risk. And, you know, the Sox are betting on themselves. Murakami's betting on himself. It could be potentially a win-win. And, you know, I don't see a reason why if he isn't, or if he is, you know, going to be afforded that kind of contract, that the White Sox can't be in on that too.
Yeah, I think another fun part about this is, you know, this is not like this is college football, but like the White Sox and Chris Getz have clearly proven to everybody that they know how to recruit and they know how to get these guys in the door. You know, Murakami clearly, you know, talked about how he bought into the vision. Well, clearly Getz laid it all out there. And clearly he knows how to get these guys to sign contracts here. And, you know, listen, it's not easy to sign a contract with a team that's lost as much as they have. And so I think it's a neat situation for Getz, I'm sure. And I know he's thrilled. I mean, you saw it throughout the interviews and kind of at the press conference today.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's exciting times. I do think that there is potential for this to be I feel like there's potential for him to be a solid superstar here in Chicago. I do think that, you know, like we said earlier in the show, they have the right staff in place to maybe pull more out of him than has ever been pulled out of him in Japan. And I think that if that happens, we could be looking at a guy who could potentially be, you know, one of the new faces of the organization for some time to come. You know, we'll see how that plays out in the future, but it's very interesting and exciting to see that where we're at here at this time of year.
Yeah. It also explains, I know there are some people disappointed in like their inactivity over the last couple of weeks and that there is no deal after the K deal. Now it all makes sense. Obviously this was kind of going to determine your offseason whenever you sign a guy to as big of a contract. I mean, this is, I think, the second largest contract in terms of AAV in White Sox history behind Grandal's 4 for $73. So, I mean, this is a big deal for the White Sox. So it kind of explains why I think the brakes are put on a little bit in terms of spending. I don't know, like, this probably takes them out of Fairbanks. This probably takes them out of a premier right fielder, which is completely fine. I have no issue with that at all. I mean, you take the Mune over those guys any day of the week. But I think now you go a little bit more in the bargain bin, see what you can get in the bullpen and a right fielder. That's why I think Talkman makes a ton of sense for them coming back on 1 year, $1 million.
Yeah. I mean, I get that, but at the same time, I'm like, maybe it signals they do go for that back end piece. At least one, you know, they might kind of skimp on some of the middle reliever guys, but I don't know, Pete Fairbanks, and I'm not doing this just to, you know, disagree with you. I just want to play devil's advocate a little bit here. And like, maybe, especially since Getz says like he feels like this was the type of move that they unexpectedly, he said, like, we weren't really sure if we were in this market or not until, you know, just recently. And it unexpectedly kind of accelerates where they're at. There's a chance that maybe you sign a Fairbanks type guy. If he'll take like 2 years or maybe 2 years with an option year or even two option years or whatever it is, or give him mutual options so he can give an opt out after every year if he doesn't like it here. You know what I mean? And work up something that brings him here at least for a little while. And he would be the guy that you maybe trade away for potential, you know, future stars. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what the rest of the offseason looks like. I really don't. I think they're going to add a starter, a right fielder, and two bullpen pieces. I just don't know who the starter, reliever, or the two bullpen pieces are.
Well, you did say you wanted to get into it a little bit. Why don't you go ahead and bring up the Talkman thing then?
Oh, I just think it makes sense. I mean, Talkman is such a weird market. I think, you know, looking back on it, there's a potential that Talkman asked to be not released, but asked to maybe test the waters. And I think, you know, he probably has tested the waters and is, I mean, Yaz Yastrzemski from the Giants just got like 1 year, $6 million from the Mariners. Like he was the premier right fielder on the market and got nothing. I don't think the corner outfield market's very strong. So I think Talkman's probably looking at, you know, whatever, 1 year, $1 million, 1 year, $2 million. And I think the White Sox would be happy to bring him back at that range. I think Talkman makes a ton of sense to come back to the Sox.
Well, if you remember when he was non-tendered at the end of the year, I immediately said, like, there's a chance that this is all being done to avoid arbitration with him so that they can get him on a cheaper, you know, one, maybe even another two-year deal that's going to get him less than, the you know, the $3.5 million he was projected to get in arbitration. They might be able to bring him back at, like, $2 million even and still save themselves $1.5 million a year, which is exactly the kind of move I expect the White Sox to make. You know, yeah, that's what we've become accustomed to as White Sox fans and the front office. And, you know, we don't forget who our owner is, regardless if we could say, well, you know, the money has been spent in years past. It has. It's been spent in the wrong places often. It hasn't been spent wisely, but it's been spent. I'm not saying he's the cheapest man on the planet. He just, A, doesn't like to give out the long-term big dollar deal.
Shout out John Dinks.
Right. And B, just doesn't like to give pitching money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, between those two things, we know that the money is spent in ways that we don't necessarily agree with. And that's just typical of what he would do. So I do potentially see, I'm actually kind of hopeful to see Talkman back out in right field because outside of him, we don't really have anybody else.
It is Brooks Baldwin currently.
Yeah, it's Brooks Baldwin, and you hope that, you know, Benintendi's Achilles thing is good to go for left field next season.
Yeah, I mean, Braden's coming up at some point. I don't think he's going to break camp. I'd be actually utterly shocked if he broke camp. But Braden will be, assuming things go well, in right field some point next season.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, you could even roll him as a fourth outfielder for a little bit, let him get acclimated. And you'd be completely fine. So it just kind of depends. I don't think they're going to spend a ton in right field just because they probably feel like they have a future great player in Braden Montgomery, rightfully so, to kind of take this place.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey. Right. Hey, we're about the hour mark, man.
Time flies when you're having fun, right?
Yeah. You got anything else you want to add before we wrap it up?
I think that's it. Happy holidays, everybody.
Yes. Thanks for coming and hanging out with us on a strange day. We don't typically go on Monday, so we appreciate all you guys as usual. It's been awesome to see how things have gone. The last couple of weeks have been really exciting, and you guys have been here for it every step of the way, so we appreciate you. Do we have any hot takes or heaters before we sign off today?
It worked last week, so I'll go with the hot take that the Sox signed somebody this week. How about that?
You know what? I'm all for it, man. Let's have another Merry Christmas present here. We got a little bit of an early Christmas present this week. I'm down. I will, again, you talked about it earlier in the show, and that's very clever. Merry Karma Christmas, everyone.
There it is.
Thank you, Uncle Ted. I'm going to give it up to Getz. He did a couple of things that I was highly impressed with. First off, signing Murakami and giving us some hope that there is a horizon that has, you know, some guys outside the organization coming here to Chicago that could help us out. You know, not that we necessarily need to go that route, but it's just good to know that we can and that it may continue down the road. And then again, for having Mounet's back when some of the reporters were asking ridiculous questions that really didn't need to be answered today anyway. So I will, we'll wrap it up there. Jacob, you have yourself a wonderful Christmas.
You too.
We will, by the way, guys, Jake and I have already discussed, we will try to get on sometime next week. Maybe we'll do another Monday show. I don't know, but we're going to avoid going on, you know, New Year's Eve or the day before or whatever it is. You know, we appreciate all you guys checking in, and we'll figure out when exactly that is we're going to go next week. Hopefully the Sox give us some reason to come on, but I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about between now and then. In the meantime, you guys have been absolutely fantastic. I'm going to ask you one more favor to please go ahead and just hit that like and subscribe button. We appreciate all you guys. If you enjoy the content, Super Chats are always open. You can always check out all our other shows that are live as well. I know Elijah is planning to go live, or at least maybe he's going to do a recorded show here in the near future. He put out a short video yesterday, so if you guys haven't caught that, check it here on our YouTube channel. We really appreciate that. And then keep your eyes and ears open for more from him and possibly Dylan and Jeff. But again, happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Check out our other shows. Check out the website. If you like our written stuff, go on to the paywall and pay the $2 of Patreon. We appreciate that as well, too. And don't forget, we are now a proud partner of the Just Baseball Media Network. So give them a follow on Twitter and check out their stuff as well. For my co-host, I am Danny Miller. He is Jacob Thome. You can find him at jthome21 on X. You can find me at Danny Miller FS on X. And as always, until next week, go White Sox.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.